Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Here we go again, it's our film explosion. A movie countdown of real devotion. It could get long, so bring your ibuprofen. I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion.
What's got the best acting? What's got the best direction?
The cream of the crop, here's our selection.
From comedy to drama, even blaxploitation. I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion.
I'm telling you all, it's a film explosion! Film explosion!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast. We are the best movie podcast in the whole world. I am joined by Brad.
Hey.
And Zach.
Hello.
We're going to go back 10 years. And we're going to redo our Filmsplosion 2014 list. Mm-hmm. We've had time to reflect, grow. Brad, you feel that your list has changed?
It has definitely changed. This year and next year, well, 14 and 15. 15, I had a lot of movies from 14 that were like on the cusp of award season that rolled over into 15. And now I had to go back and think, well, now that we're redoing it, should I not go by my rule of this is what I saw in the theater at this time?
I'm sorry, it's called the doubt decision of 2008.
should I take this opportunity to realign my list? Because it is technically a different episode.
Yep.
And it isn't about, you know, the first time around was like my theater habits of the year.
Yeah.
But now it's 10 years later and it's like, it's really about the year itself.
Well, and two, you know, our film selection lists at the end of the year are usually so immediate that, as you have time to reflect on what you've done, or watched, or you've grown as a person or
seen stuff that you didn't see in theaters.
Yeah. You know, I always think about times changed. I've changed.
I feel like about a year out of from our 2019 film explosion, like I felt my own preferences began to change. Like I don't even necessarily think the films themselves would have gone out of there, but like their placement might have been different.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed as I've done this podcast now for 13 years, almost 14 years, is my love for certain movies doesn't really change. But I feel I've matured as a film watcher.
I'm glad you used it the way it's supposed to be said, matured.
Yes. And that really comes through, being exposed to things again. You know, Zach, with your love for Golden Hollywood, it reignited mine because I used to watch TCM with my grandfather all the time. And then with Brad, you know, stuff like Psycho Goreman, you know, grows on me.
Garbage. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yes.
And Brad, well, your love of trash.
Well, I always laugh because you appreciate films in a different way when you've done this for so long. So this is an opportunity. If my memory serves me right, Brad, is this our last retro film explosion?
2004, which I don't think we mentioned it. That's our last retro film explosion. From now on, here on out, we're only going to go back and do film explosions, like redos of the, you know, like the ones we did the first time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like of the new years, not, we're not going to, it's not like we're going to redo 1986 or something.
Yeah.
No.
There's been plenty of time before we even did that one that we were able to.
Yeah. So I'll have to think of some new format for film explosion. I really liked
the thing we did for our 600th episode where people pick random movies for us to watch.
I was going to say, like, I still got that list. That should just be our film explosion going forward, is like forcing each other to watch the stuff we don't want to watch.
Yeah, you know, what's that one you made me watch? Is like, I don't know, it's like an ecstasy movie.
Oh,
I blocked it out of my head.
The Gaspar Noé film. Fuck.
Climax?
Yeah.
Climax.
Was it Climax?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Shitmax is what it was.
nice dig.
That was a horrible fucking... but yeah, no, I think as you... Yeah, just over time, it's interesting how much has changed in 10 years. A lot of my films are still the same. I might have reordered them. Yeah. I just have fun doing this stuff. And so... and you know, people can't see it, but you can see it on our banners. I really love your poster you made for this one.
Yeah, the first time out was Guardians of the Galaxy themed, and I figured, you know, this redo, it's another chance to play with some other movies' design. So I picked the other, I say arguably most popular movie of that year was the Lego Movie. So
remember, like, when the Lego franchise was going to be the biggest thing on this fucking planet?
Who knew?
Yeah, like deservedly so, but yeah, it petered out really quick for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not sure why.
I don't know. I think that Ninjago movie kind of hurt it.
It's like, yeah, it was just like one, though, because the Lego Batman movie was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, after
Lego
that one.
Lego Movie 2 was pretty good, too.
Yeah. I think the surprise element of that first Lego movie being as amazing as it was is kind of like, it's hard to top that.
Do you think in 2014 things really were awesome, and then after 2016
oh geez,
everything wasn't awesome?
Yeah, I mean,
because the second one came out in 2018, I think.
Yeah,
so that's a long time to put out a sequel.
I know, especially now. You mean, you want to capitalize on what's the right word, the wave of momentum that you have. But yeah, if you've never listened to a film explosion before, welcome. We take our 10 favorite films of each of us through this year of 2014. We introduce the films, play the trailer, and then talk about why we put them where we put them. If there is one that we swept from somebody else later on, we won't play the trailer again. But we'll also talk about why it's higher on our list, someone else's list. And yes, this isn't... Again, critical darlings. This is stuff we love, and we all have different tastes. And
now they're reevaluated.
Yes. Are they better or are they worse? Fixing to find out.
So what you should do at home is go back and listen to the other film explosion from 10 years ago, and then watch pay attention as the lists change. Cause
yeah,
as someone who's already made the DVD, they are quite different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. And so Brad's already authored the Blu-ray. So the order is going to go myself, the best, Brad, and then Zach.
Just like last
correct
time.
Correct order, yeah. At last.
So I'll start us off. Number 10 for me is...
I'd like to point out, you've been first twice now.
I know.
You're always whining that you're never first.
It's how it's supposed to be.
So at long last, will you not let him rest?
The multiverse is finally back in order because I'm in charge of the TVA.
But the twist is nobody... remembers that you're Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Is that
how that works? Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay.
Number 10 for me is a franchise that who knew is going to become a franchise. And yeah, I'm thinking he's back.
I'm up. You like that, huh?
Nice ride.
Thanks.
How much?
Excuse me?
How much for the car?
She's not for sale.
You have good day, sir.
Daisy. I lost everything. That dog was a final gift from my dying wife.
Jonathan, you got out once. You dip so much as a pinky back into this pond, you may find something reaching out to pull you back in.
It's personal.
Where'd you get that car?
What does it matter?
It's not what you did, son. It's who you did it to.
Nobody?
that nobody. It's John Wick.
You working again?
No, just sorting some stuff out.
Task your crew.
How many?
As many as you have.
Hey, John. I thought I'd let myself in.
People keep asking if I'm back. Yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
I'm not afraid of John Wick.
How good's your laundry?
No one's that good.
I thought not.
My number 10 film is John Wick. I didn't know I was going to sweep someone. It's kind of cool how this, even the trailer is a little misleading on what the actual story is.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why people were pleasantly surprised between the action and the actual emotional core of the film about a dude who just wanted to retire and his wife died and these people kill his dog and he goes back and kills them. And it turns out he's, you know, the head of, or not the head of, he's part of an assassin circle where they use Mario coins to pay for stuff. And just a fun franchise, and each one is pretty good. Even I think the fourth one is one of the best ones. Yeah, it's just a movie I can put on and just have fun watching. And just recently revisiting the first one, yeah, I can see why it became popular, because there wasn't really anything like it in an action style. You know, they started using those really long takes of fighting, and it came out of, you know, the decade earlier where everything is cut. Because we just did Filmsplosion 2004, and, you know, Saw was like that, was cut. Mm-hmm. But Saw was more of, you know, a budget limitations why they did it. But people gravitated towards that, whether it was the Bourne Identity or things like that. And John Wick kind of, you know, we're going to keep it on our hero, and he's going to go through his house and he's going to dispatch people cool ways while shooting them.
I think it can't be underestimated how influential some of that, like, late 90s, early 2000s martial art explosion is, like, a big motivating factor as to why people did go to this in droves, because it kind of rekindles that a little bit. And also this, the trailer doesn't sell how much martial arts or, like, hand-to-hand combat is going on. It's mostly the gunplay.
Yeah. So, like I said, like, the trailer is not very good, but, you know,
I think the buzz from the festival circuit is a lot of what for sure. It off. Yeah. Like,
and I think people, generally like Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. So they'll usually give him a chance. You know, I don't know very many of his films that straight up flop, because he's just one of those likable actors that people usually go out to see.
The Lake House was not his fault.
No. Well, and you can always try something new.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's fine.
I don't want him to just be Theodore Logan or Neo, but although I'd watch those two universes collide if they gave it to me.
I am in the FBI. It's like my favorite Keanu Reeves delivery ever. Brad, you're number 10.
My number 10 definitely hasn't gotten any better in 10 years, and I left it on here because as a movie that exposes government secrets, it couldn't be more important for these times.
I was given paranormal powers as a child. I've hacked into just about all the information I need. They have no idea.
No more books!
You were given a power.
Others want to take this from me.
He's writing about government secrets.
I knew I loved you when I was 8 years old. all this time, I haven't been working on my next book. I've hacked into the most secret government and corporate secrets. I'm using it to make a real difference. And I'm going to expose them all. Should I be afraid? Should we be afraid? I'm not ready for this. I want to be honest with all of you. I've been hacking into government and corporate systems all over the country.
You're going to get yourself killed.
But you should be scared, because it is the truth. Act now, on your own, outside of the corporate systems and these incompetent politicians.
You want to get out of here, but you can't see what's about to happen.
So yeah, my number 10 is Fateful Findings, technically a 2013 movie, but I did see it in 2014, so...
I dare you to tell me it came out in 2013.
It's been 10 years since I saw that trailer, and I still don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, so Fateful Findings, I haven't seen it since 2014, but I do own it, and it's about...
Wait, if there's a Blu-ray on it?
Yeah, you have to order it directly from his website. It doesn't even come in like a... case with art. It's just a jewel case with a, you know, printed like Helvetica font on it.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, Fateful Findings is supposedly about a guy who's hacking into the government to expose their secrets, and he runs into maybe like his soulmate as a child, and that's a thing. It's pretty bad, but no. That's the Neil Breen brand is
Wait,
you know, low
made
budget
more movies.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of them.
Really?
Yeah. The one after this is I think Twisted Pear. I saw that at the Alamo, and then I think last year was Cade, the tortured something, the tortured soul, and that was like just stock him on in front of stock footage for an hour and a half.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like in this trailer, you see him actually out in the world filming.
Uh-huh.
And then Cade, he just downloaded stuff off of Shutterstock.
Oh, it's like when George Lucas started doing everything CG. He's totally like George Lucas.
Yeah. Yeah, all the backgrounds are just stock photos. It's nuts. I saw this, I think, at the Esquire when it came out. And no, actually, no, it was the C Film Center. But I was just like so blown away. No, wait, maybe it was a midnight at the Esquire. I can't remember. Not that it matters. But yeah, I was just like, I couldn't, like, the audience was having so much fun with it. And I was just like kind of flabbergasted that this is like, this has a fan base. But it's very much like in the spirit of The Room. Except, I don't know, like, there's like a, like a shitty vibe, but like almost it's got to be intentional. Like it's got to be made on purpose because of The Room, right?
Yeah, I don't know. What you ordered from his website, does he take himself seriously?
Yeah, it seems like he's some real estate guy who stopped doing real estate and is like really wealthy. He's just pivoted into making movies, but like I just don't know how after what 15, 20 years now, he hasn't like grown as a filmmaker.
Like when you hit gold or you hit oil, why do you don't keep drilling? You just stop and let it rain.
And he doesn't want to be interfered with by any bureaucratic studio system. He's an independent filmmaker to the fullest.
It's like they're actually getting worse. So it's got to be intentional, right? Like they're made like this on purpose. Anyway.
Neil Breen, come on the show. Tell us what the fuck's going on.
Zach, so, yeah. Number 10?
My number 10, Fateful Findings.
My list has shifted a lot. partially because this was a year where I didn't go to as many movies as I normally would, because I was going through some dark times. But my number 10 is a film by a filmmaker that I can enjoy and written by my favorite screenwriters of all time. Here it is.
This is what it's come to, huh? You are the only living soul I can tell my secret to. I painted every single one of them. Every big eye. Me. No one will ever know but you.
You made it! You're at North Beach!
Come on, let's have some espresso.
What's that? Is that like reefer?
You have a lot to learn.
What's your name?
Margaret. Wouldn't you rather flirt with those girls down there?
No, I like you, Margaret.
Wow, this is all happening mighty quick.
I am a divorcee with a child. Walter is a blessing.
You're gonna love this stuff.
Why are their eyes so big?
The eyes are the windows of the soul.
That's why I paint them so big. I've always done it that way.
Why are you lying?
Sadly, people don't buy lady art.
The painting says keen.
I'm keen, you're keen.
Smile.
We're sold out.
They adore you, big eyes.
He sells paintings, then he sells pictures of the paintings, then he sells postcards of pictures of the paintings.
Good God, it's a movement.
So, are you flipping for all this?
Honestly, I can't believe I live here.
I remember when Mama painted that.
You're confused. I painted that.
What is troubling you?
I lied to my child. I'm just not that kind of person.
Is your husband that kind of person?
These paintings are a part of my being. Maybe I could sign it myself.
That sounds a bit confusing, doesn't it? Keen means me.
Do you want to give back the money?
If you tell anyone, this empire collapses.
If that's the price. It's like a mirage. From a distance, you look like a painter. But up close, there's just not much there.
That's an outrageous statement!
She's unhinged.
You don't even know what the truth is.
So, who is the artist?
My number 10 is Big Eyes. It's a Tim Burton film written by Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski. These are my favorite type of Tim Burton movies. The kind where he is not relying on the imagery that admittedly he adores doing, but has become his trademark and his stamp. This is one of those films similar to Ed Wood and Big Fish where he has to kind of get creative with how he's going to express his own version while also kind of telling a more grounded story. In the case of this, it's the story of Walter and Margaret Keane, the Big Eyes paintings that Margaret was painting and that Walter was passing off as his own. I loved watching this film, and I still think fondly of it. It's a great Christoph Waltz performance and a very subdued Amy Adams because of the character she's being asked to play, who has to eventually gain the confidence to stand up to Walter by the end of the movie. I think that it's proof positive that Tim Burton can never be counted out. Because I understand that it wasn't like as popular as maybe Ed Wood was, upon Afterthought or even Big Fish when it came out. But these kind of films are the reminder of how powerful an artist he is. And I think with Karaszewski and Alexander, their trademark of underdog biopics or biopics of things you didn't think you wanted falls firm in here. I enjoy the fact that it is another example of where Burton can shine. And I like Danny Houston just a whole lot. So whatever I can see him in a film, great. Yeah, my number 10, Big Eyes.
Yeah, that's a good one. I wish he'd make more movies like that.
I agree. Yeah.
Doesn't print money, though, like Beetlejuice.
You say it one more time, we're fucked.
My number 9 film is the first time I ever really heard about Kickstarter. It's from a beloved cult TV show with an angel for a lead actor. No matter what Brad says, This is my number 9.
You were issued a private investigator's license for your 18th birthday? What do you think that says about a person?
Compulsive, addictive personality, but that's not me anymore.
My daughter, the big shot New York lawyer. You're destined for greatness.
I've oversold you. My parents don't think that I could have landed a creature such as the one that I've described.
Local authorities have ruled the death a homicide and are focusing their investigation on her boyfriend, Logan Eccles.
I need your help, Veronica.
I don't really do that anymore.
What's this? I specifically told the agency an eager to please brunette.
Dick.
Hey, Logan, that girl who follows you around is here.
9 years of radio silence, and yet I still kind of knew I could count on you.
We are going to the reunion.
I'm shocked you even came to this. I knew you'd be here. You've been sitting there since graduation, haven't you?
Veronica Mars.
Look who it is. Most likely to blog in class buzzkill.
You are just who I was looking for. Most likely to know where I can find the bar. Gross. No.
Veronica, this is the whole case file. How'd you get this? I'm sure you know breaking and entering is a felony.
Come on. I knew the felonies before I knew the state capitals.
So, are you gonna ask if I did it?
I wouldn't be here if I thought you did.
America thinks he's guilty, and that's good enough for me. I know Logan has his qualities, but there's a darkness to that kid.
There's just so much going on here right now. I just couldn't leave.
Sure you could.
Wait. Don't go. I'm on to something, Dad. It's big.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
Everyone is in the take.
Veronica, whatever you're doing, please be careful.
Come on!
What are you gonna do? Use your stun gun on me? Don't you think that's gotten a bit old? Original enough for ya?
My number 9 film is Veronica Mars. Starring the wonderful Kristen Bell as Veronica Mars. It's from a TV show that only lasted 3 seasons, but I absolutely adore and fell in love with. In high school, she plays a private investigator, quote unquote, and she solves mysteries at her school. And this takes place 10 years later, and she's called back to her school because her ex-boyfriend is accused of murdering someone, and she's going to find out who actually did it. It's a really fun mystery movie. All the characters settle right back into their roles. It was a crowdfunded film, and then it made so much money that Warner Brothers helped pick it up and distribute it, and I don't think it was distributed that... I can't remember that far back.
It was extremely limited. Yeah. I don't remember what theaters it was playing in, but I remember that they could only do so much with it.
Yeah, I was really excited for it, though. I love the show, and I love the movie. It just continues my admiration for young blonde women that kick butt, whether it's Buffy or Veronica.
Jennifer Lawrence in The Hunger Games.
Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah.
Grace Kelly in Rear Window.
Or To Catch a Thief. I just really love the film. It's always been kind of a favorite of mine with the TV show. And I always hope that one day it'll find another audience out there. Yeah, number 9, Veronica Mars.
My number 9 is dropped a few spots, but only because I really haven't watched it a lot since it came out. But I think it's a pretty technically interesting and creative movie.
How did we end up here? This place is horrible. Smells like balls. We had it all. You were a movie star, remember?
Who was this guy? He used to be Birdman.
I like that poster.
You wrote this adaptation?
I did, yeah.
And you're directing and starring in your adaptation. That's ambitious.
Are you afraid people will say you're doing this play to battle the impression that you're a washed-up comic strip character?
Absolutely not. That's why 20 years ago I said no to Birdman 4.
Hold the mask off!
Thank you, everybody.
You do have the mask off!
Now you're about to destroy what's left of your career.
Oh!
We should have done that reality show they offered us.
Shut up.
Oh, ah, I'm gonna grab up on your ass, fucking choke you out.
Choke. You know I'm right.
You're so annoying.
Hey, what's up? Why don't you try to rest a little bit?
Face it, Dad. You're doing this because you're scared to death, like the rest of us, that you don't matter. And you know what? You're right. You don't.
Baby, can you understand me now? Sometimes I get a little mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, they seem to go bad.
Listen to me. You are the original man. Let's make a comeback. That's what I'm talking about. You're Birdman. You are a god.
Hey, is this for real or are you shooting a film?
A film!
You people are full of shit.
Music.
He's a Hollywood clown in a Lyco bird suit.
Yes, he is. But he's going out on that stage and risking everything.
It's about being respected and validated. Remember, that's what you told me. That's how you got me into this shit.
I got a chance to do something right. I gotta take it.
Let's go back one more time and show them what we're capable of.
Marvin!
There you go, you motherfucker.
Dude, you fucking rock!
So yeah, my number nine is Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. I like it because, for one, it's all like one single take movie. I'm sure it's stitched together, but the way it's presented, it feels like one continuous thing about a Regan Thompson, who's basically playing Michael Keaton, playing Batman, trying to resurrect his career after years being out of the spotlight from his superhero days, trying to resurrect his career through this play. And it's like this, you know, dramatic and surreal experience of this guy just trying to like get through this play. I just think it's really interesting of a movie.
Yeah, you know, watching the trailer again, I haven't seen it in a while, but I am reminded of how great Emma Stone is in it as his daughter. And, you know, she's not in it very much, but her scenes are so impactful that it's a different kind of movie. And it is definitely worth seeing.
It is. It was on my, I think it was on my list from before, but I couldn't put it on there because, one, I hadn't seen it since then. So I didn't really feel justified, like it didn't spark the same memories as, say, Big Eyes, but I like the film from what I recall. But I feel like in a world where everybody gets angry at comic book movies, that this film feels like a starting point of a bunch of anger and rage from people in the art community. So I tend to think of it as like slightly negative. But Inarritu's undeniably masterful at what he pulls off in that movie, from the single take effect on down to the performances. The whole critic, all the moments with the critic in the movie are fantastic.
So. Yeah, like it was higher 10 years ago on my list, and it's just it's only really fallen because I haven't. It's one of those movies where I don't want to just like put on the background and just like ignore it. It's I want to sit down and like really be focused on it again, and that just opportunity hasn't presented itself too much. So yeah, my number nine, Birdman.
Sweet.
Zach?
My number nine? My number nine is a film that I haven't watched since the theater. However, it was one of those powerful films that stuck with me, not just from the story, the simple story it's telling, but the ambition that was behind it. And here it is.
Oh.
fight.
You guys ready to have some fun?
Yeah!
Yeah!
Don't worry about it.
Wish we could use the bumpers.
You don't want the bumpers. Life doesn't give you bumpers.
We have a new student joining us today.
Hey, dude. Welcome to the suck.
Mom. Have you been partying?
A little bit.
Oh, okay. I don't want to be a
big man. I just want to fight with. Who do you want to be, Mason? What do you want to do?
All right, yeah, my number nine is Boyhood, Richard Linklater's 12-year opus. I remember when, I think, I don't know if you and me went, Brad, or if it was me and James. It's one of you two.
I haven't seen this movie, so it's definitely James.
Okay, yeah, so I went with James then. That's why alcohol affects the memory. I remember going and being astounded by watching the achievement pulled off. And I remember remarking how astounding it did look, but I haven't watched it since then, but the thought of it has been recurring in my brain to the point where I do need to pick it back up, because in a weird way Linklater did what Orson Welles kept trying to do throughout the end of his life, which was you do a bunch of projects, whether for a studio or just for money, and then you can, whether pooling those resources or at least picking the story back up, you keep filming. And Linklater's ability to weave in and out of studio and his own personal projects is eternally fascinating, to the point where I don't know if that Merrily We Roll Along movie is going to fucking happen, but I'm there for it the moment they wrap and premiere it, because I liked this experience enough to want to see what he does with a 28-year saga or where, however long he's going to spend making that movie. This was one of the most rightful Oscar wins in history, with Patricia Arquette getting that Oscar. It was an astounding performance in the theater, and it's still one that sticks in my mind as a very powerful performance. It's a lot like Laura Dern in Marriage Story, where it's a performance that does truly stick out and does some very impactful things. So, yeah. I love the ambition and the experimentalism of that movie, and I think Linklater deserves all the accolades in the world for that movie eternally.
My number eight is, I guess I'll keep with the serious theme going. This is my number eight.
So, Joel, Molly, how'd you two meet?
Kind of a corny romantic comedy kind of story.
That's true.
From the creators of Wet Hot American Summer comes a film that dares to reveal the true meaning of love.
Is she okay?
You all right?
If you love love stories.
You like fiction books?
I never met anyone else who likes fiction.
That is too funny.
And if you love falling in love. Then you will love this love story.
Hey, you look different.
Really? You think so?
You've got Groucho glasses on.
You noticed.
Well, great story.
Yeah, we should get together again very soon.
Yes. We're not done.
Yeah, sit down.
Well, actually, you know, it's getting so late.
Sit your ass down, Karen.
From the director of Role Models.
If I were you, I would be very wary of my motives.
Yummy, yummy in my tummy.
It's hot, 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 hot.
The point of love is to get laid. And I'm talking about sexual intercaps. 2 points. Swish.
Do not listen to Mr. Chronically Single always dating some new hot chick guy.
Comes a romantic comedy.
All hail Joel.
Trevor, didn't you hear? You're fired. Now get out of here before I change my mind.
No, I want you to change your mind. Then I'll still have a job.
Like you've always seen before.
They came together.
No we didn't.
Only better.
Go jump in a lake, meathead.
You get it now, Mr. Combines traits that each of us represents, and all you need to do is put it all together and you'll be just fine, guy.
And weirder.
Go deep. Go deep. Go deep. Go deep.
I love you.
What is that in your ear?
What?
That's for you. You know, you're pretty adorable when you get all fussy like that.
Your story really is like a corny movie.
I know. The only difference is it's not a movie. It's our real life.
My number eight is They Came Together. That is so brilliant and so ahead of its time. It literally takes everything you know about romantic comedies and just makes it stupid. And it's a film that you have to be in the right mood to watch, which I always am because I love spoofs. But it's so smart because it's so stupid. And yeah, Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler are great in it. In the trailer, you know, he throws a football, he flies out the window. And they all have these stock characters in it and these stupid sayings. And it's one of those films that it's not, the humor isn't so in your face. It is so subtle, and the way it's delivered and the dialogue makes it really funny. And yeah, I mean, you have to kind of be on board with the Wet Hot American Summer kind of style of humor, which I adore.
Yeah.
Because all those guys, you know, Michael Ian Black, Michael Showalter, David Wayne, I like all those guys. Yeah, so it's just a movie that I enjoy because it's silly. And it's one that definitely slipped under the radar. And at the end, you know, it says in select theaters, because I think Lionsgate, who put it out, didn't understand the film either. So they just said, you know what? This is going to straight to, you know, on demand.
It seems to be a frequent motif of the Wet Hot, of the State crew with Wayne and Showalter.
Yeah.
Where they put something out, it's brilliant, but the studio doesn't know what to do with it at all. Because Wet Hot American Summer had that sort of happen to it, too.
Yeah, and I know it's brilliant because my wife hates this movie. She hates films like this, but I love them.
The weirdest metric for being a classic is that Ryan's wife doesn't like the movie.
That's how I pick all my favorite films. Brad, number eight.
My number eight is another one that's dropped a few spots, but it's one of the earliest collisions of two great franchises coming together.
Professor?
You're gonna find this hard to believe.
I was sent here for you.
From the future?
50 years from now.
Can you give me that one more time, please?
Stay with me.
In the beginning, the Sentinels were just targeting mutants. Then they began targeting everyone. They've come a long way to guide us, to bring us together. The X-Men, we need your help.
Tell whoever it was that sent you, I'm busy.
The person who sent me was you.
It's going to take all of us to end this war.
Your Beast?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Pretty strong for a scrawny kid.
I said you need to leave.
You and I are going to be good friends. You just don't know it yet.
We're going to need Mystique.
Why?
You're a cold-hearted bitch.
Well, don't hold back.
Where's Magneto?
That man is a monster. He's being held 100 floors beneath the most heavily guarded building on the planet.
I know a guy. He'd be a young man now.
He's fascinating.
He's a pain in the ass.
Prison break? That's illegal, you know. Only if you get caught. Charles.
Good to see you too, old friend.
This is gonna be fun.
There is a new enemy out there. You'll need a new weapon for this war.
Everything that happens now is in your hands.
in the future.
Do I make it?
No.
So yeah, my number eight is X-Men Days of Future Past, where Bryan Singer has returned to do another X-Men movie, and they've united the reboot cast and the legacy cast into this tale where Magneto and Xavier are the last of the mutants, and they've teamed up to send Wolverine back in time to stop Raven, aka Mystique, from igniting the first bits of the war against mutants. And it's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that they're able to pull it off.
Yeah.
I watched it recently, and yeah, it was so close to being on my list again. And everything holds up really well. The special effects are still incredible.
Yeah.
You know, what they did a great job of, and this is the anchor is always going to be Logan, and you tell the story through his point of view, and it works really well. And because, you know, this was, you're right, the first kind of, hey, you know, you might not have a big part in this, but you're important to the story. Mm. Whether it's Halle Berry or who's the kid who plays Iceman?
Sean Ashmore.
Yeah, because he gets killed in it, and but he's important to the story, and everybody's on board, and you need the anchor, that what is Hugh Jackman's Logan, and yeah, the movie is really good.
Yeah, it balances all those elements really well and gives you new stuff. Like in this movie, Wolverine, based on, you know, where he is in his life, he doesn't have the metal claws; he has the bone claws. You know,
saw is ready.
Even though we saw Xavier get paralyzed in First Class, he's back with, like, you know, he's taking drugs and to make him not paralyzed, but also he's not, like, out to save humanity or mutant kind either.
The drugs also inhibit his mutant ability.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's sort of a drug addict. It's an interesting take on the character.
Yeah.
The idea of casting Peter Dinklage as Bolivar Trask is still one of those very nice, it works in the movie. Yeah.
And, Magneto is still kind of conflicted on whether he wants to go full exterminate humanity, or maybe he can ease up, you know, find redemption in something. It's just got a bunch of layers, and
yeah,
it's really, it's a good return to form for that franchise, even though the next one was Apocalypse, which is a bit down, but.
Yeah,
not as bad as Dark Phoenix.
No, it is interesting too, because how it did restart the franchise, because they did, you know, First Class, and then they did this, and then they did two more movies with kind of, you know, a mix of the characters or eras, I guess.
But yeah, by this time, like, Marvel was taking over the superhero landscape so much that it's much harder to compete. But yeah, Days of Future Past is right up there as one of the best superhero films of all time.
Zach, number eight.
All right, we're into a territory where I've got films in here that I didn't get to see in their initial runs. This one is still kind of climbing its way through the ranks in my mind and heart. But if I had seen it in 2014, it would have definitely made the list in some form or fashion. And here it is.
A little late, Coop.
Yeah, we had a flat.
It's an Indian surveillance drone. Solar cells power an entire farm.
What'd you do, Murph?
She didn't do nothing.
Murphy's law.
You're a well-educated man, Coop. And a trained pilot.
And an engineer.
The world doesn't need any more engineers. We didn't run out of planes and television sets. We ran out of food.
Something that's bad.
No, we didn't.
Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law doesn't mean that something bad will happen. It means that whatever can happen will happen.
We must confront the reality that nothing in our solar system can help us.
Now you need to tell me what your plan is to save the world.
We're not meant to save the world.
were meant to leave it. And this is the mission we were trained for.
We've got kids, Professor.
Get out there and save them.
You have no idea when you're coming back.
I'm coming back.
We must reach far beyond our own lifespans. We must think not as individuals.
Yep, my number eight is Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. James is the one who loaned me the copy to watch it finally, and was not disappointed, except in myself for not having seen it on a big screen. Movie's gorgeous. The emotion is on point, and it's dazzling to look at and think about. The Matt Damon twist in the middle of the movie was something that I thankfully had nobody reveal to me, so it was a shock to me, going like, what the fuck are you doing here? The finale with the, you know, pushing all the books off the shelves and whatnot and speaking to her through another, you know, plane of existence, more or less, is absolutely poetic. It's nice to think about. It's not my favorite Christopher Nolan movie on the whole, but it's one that I'm glad has found the success that it did. It's definitely, I know some people don't like it because it's super fucking long, but I kind of enjoy that about this film and other Nolan films, which is he does give you a theatrical experience that is meant to be enjoyed for that long amount of time. And obviously with my previous choices in the past, we all know that I enjoy 3.5 hour movies. I think it's still got a good strong presence all these years later, and it's got a fantastic cast all around. It's a perfectly fine watch.
No, it's a really good film. Christopher Nolan doesn't make bad movies.
I don't think I've encountered a movie of his that I haven't like truly hated. Like, yeah. I don't hate Tenet.
Tenet's a fun movie. I mean, he makes fun films. Yeah. I mean, I'm totally down with what he, and I'll always see what he makes because, and I don't care if a movie's long, just make sure the story is told and it's good.
By the way, I'm excited for Oppenheimer 2.
When the dust settles. My number seven is, I'm going to scale it way back. This is a small budget horror film.
I used to daydream about being old enough to go on dates. I had this image of myself holding hands with a really cute guy, driving along some pretty road. About going anywhere, really. Just having some sort of freedom, I guess.
Jay, you awake?
What are you doing?
You're not gonna believe me, and I need you to remember what I'm saying.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you.
Wherever you are, somewhere walking straight for you. All you can do is pass it along to someone else.
I'm scared. I need to find him.
Did he really do to you?
Apparently he used a fake name to rent a house in the city.
This isn't real. I swear to you, this is just some game.
If it kills her, it gets me and goes straight down the line whoever started it.
What exactly is supposed to be following you?
I don't know.
Something happened. It's not what she thinks, okay?
You don't believe me. Mom? No, it's me.
Everything's okay.
It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. Whatever helps it get close to you.
My number seven is the horror film It Follows, which is a film about a young woman who sleeps with a young man, and it has a consequence that you're not prepared for, that some sort of entity or demon will follow you and kill you eventually. And it does it as you sleep with somebody. And the only way you can get rid of the demon is to sleep with someone and pass it along. So eventually it's going to catch up to you. And so there's always this looming dread throughout the film. It's really well made. It's definitely creepy. I mean, there's a naked dude just hanging out on a roof and you see his dick and balls, and that's just terrifying. I'm always a sucker for horror films, and anytime something's unique, I'm always excited to watch it, and this is definitely one of them. Yeah. It Follows. There's a lot of energy in this room today.
It's a good John Carpenter vibe about it throughout the entirety of the film.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a film he would have made, like, in that Prince of Darkness period.
That one shot where the entity appears, like, behind the girl in the doorway,
mm-hmm.
like in the theater, mm-hmm. this like was, I mean, it's in the trailer, but like in the movie itself, it was just like so shocking because
yeah.
you don't think anything's following at that moment. And that just, that giant dude appears out of that darkness and you're just like, oh shit.
Yeah. It's just that I think the unrelenting and uneasiness of the film is why it works so well. And the cast are really great in the film.
Yeah.
Micah Monroe, this is yeah. one of the big breaks, I think.
Yeah, she kind of became a scream queen after this.
Yeah, long legs. Hey, long
legs. And The Watcher is really good, if you haven't seen it.
Oh, Watcher, I haven't seen Watcher yet.
They were working on a sequel to this
yeah.
recently, right? I think they announced it like 4 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I think they're still working on it. I still think it should have been called It Still Follows, but it's some other
thing. What are they
thing. Calling it? I forget what they're calling
it's
it.
It's Following.
Yeah, It's Following or something. So yeah, number seven, It Follows.
Nice.
My number seven is My Tempo.
This place is nice.
I really like the music that they play. Bob Ellis on the drums. I'm part of Schaefer's top jazz orchestra. It's the best music school in the country.
The key is to just relax. Don't worry about the numbers. Don't worry about what the other guys are thinking. You're here for a reason. Have fun.
Five, six, and.
I want to be great.
And you're not.
Here. Little trouble there. You're rushing. Here we go. Five, six, and. Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will gut you like a pig.
Oh, my dear God. Are you one of those single-tier people?
You are a worthless pansy ass who is now weeping and slobbering all over my drum set like a 9-year-old girl.
So how's it going with the studio band?
Good. Yeah, I think he likes me more now.
I push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity.
I want to be one of the greats. And because I'm doing that, it's going to take up more of my time. And this is why I don't think that we should be together.
I would never let him put my son through hell. Why would you let him get away with what he did to you?
There are no two words in the English language more harmful than good job.
So yeah, my number seven is Whiplash, which if you saw the trailer, it came out in 13. Also, it's listed as 14, but it was on my 2015 list because it came out. Must have
been some sort of like awards run or something, or festival
year
circuit.
And a half long awards run.
Well, it was a 2014 general release for the awards qualifiers.
Yeah,
I think.
But yeah, it was on my 2015 list, and I moved over to 2014 because it's about this year now. And yeah, it's a great film. I feel like I'm talked about it too much because I recently watched in the 10th anniversary re-releases like three times. So
yeah, it's a little higher on my list. This movie is one of those films that it's just this intensity to it constantly, and you always feel on edge. It's a great film.
It's like Ford v Ferrari. I like watching films where like people are being their best at stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, like watching this guy, just his determination to be the best drum player, and then J.K. Simmons' character Fletcher just taking it too far to like drive this kid to be his best. But that whole, it's all worth it for that end sequence where he challenges Fletcher and just drums anyway.
Yeah.
And does that huge solo, and it's intense and great, and
it's one of those films where I'm glad, like, obviously people enjoyed J.K. Simmons prior, but like this did open him up to an even wider swath of people who may not have known who he was.
Yeah.
And like how sustainable he's been through so many supporting performances over the years. Like it's one of those Oscar wins that like you just jump up and applaud when you see it announced. And Teller's great in the movie. Chazelle rocks, man. Still haven't seen Babylon, but Chazelle rocks.
Yeah, Babylon's definitely an indulgent movie.
I'll watch it someday.
I got it last year for Black Friday because it was like the 4K was, I think, $11. Uh-huh. I was like, you know what? I think it's worth to rewatch for $11. I haven't watched it yet. But that Babylon's insane.
Right on. Cool. My number 7 is a film that I didn't get to see in theaters, but it is part of one of my favorite film franchises of all time. And it might be the best among the three that initially came out. And here it is.
Apes do not want war.
You know the scary thing about them? They don't need power. Lights, heat, nothing. That's their advantage. That's what makes them stronger.
We both have families. You want to protect yours. I want to protect mine. It's our only chance for peace.
Are you aware?
No!
They are going to turn on you.
Caesar, you're all.
Who was that?
A good man like you.
Caesar, love humans more than apes.
If you threaten his family, he will retaliate.
Don't shoot! Don't you move!
Should we shoot him?
Maybe.
Whoa.
Oh, you want a drink?
Okay,
all right.
Easy.
All right.
What are you doing? I'm saving the human race.
Oh my God.
We made contact. Military. They're already on their way.
Caesar, you have to go.
Go where?
This is my home.
There must be another way.
Yeah, summit number 7 is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The second in the initial reboot trilogy for Planet of the Apes. Matt Reeves takes over, and in a lot of ways, I like Rise of the Planet of the Apes a lot. Like, it's one of those great films that wasn't expected to be as powerful as it ended up being. But Matt Reeves, I think, does bring us back to the core themes of the Planet of the Apes in terms of it being an allegory. I think the way they expand the ape world, where we're not having them fully talking and on horseback and having their own, like, nothing's as organized as it is, ends up being in 1968's original film yet. And so I do appreciate that he took time with the evolution on it. He didn't just jump the gun and go like, now the whole ape community has taken over. And watching the conflict between them and the surviving group of humans with Kerry Russell and Jason Clarke at the forefront of it. And I think that it elevates even further what Andy Serkis was doing with the mocap tech. He's one of those actors who is the evidence that you need to start treating mocap performing seriously, beyond just the parameters of that's fantastic. And this film in particular is really good at towing the line between genuine drama and solid action set pieces and danger and whatnot. And it's similar to the original Planet of the Apes, where it feels scary at times. Like, when it gets dark, it gets fucking dark. Like, that scene with the ape that's pretending to fuddle with the gun and whatnot and then holding it on them is fantastic little horror set piece. When they've got all of Caesar's followers trapped in that bus and whatnot and caged up and whatnot, it's unnerving, it's tension fueled. I think it's got to be my favorite of the reboot films thus far, with Kingdom being second and War being third thus far. And it deserves that spot. It's just an absolute delight. So yeah, if anybody hasn't seen Dawn of the Planet of the Apes yet, I'm sure it's on Disney Plus somewhere. You can check it out.
The new Planet of the Apes movies are all really great.
Yes, they are. Yeah. There's not really a bad one in the bunch. I just happen to like this one the most out of all the four that's come out thus far.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Number 6 is one of my most favorite documentaries. I usually don't put documentaries too often on these lists, but for some reason this one really struck a chord with me. It's my number 6.
It's been like this the whole time. Deacon on dishes, and it still hasn't moved in 5 years. You're a cool guy, but you're not pulling your weight in the flat.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that I'm cool.
No, that's not the point, though. Yeah, you're missing
the
point.
Not that I know. Flat meeting about how cool you are.
When you get 3 vampires in a flat, obviously there's going to be a lot of tension.
Viago was an 18th century dandy.
Look, a ghost cop.
Vladislav is a bit of a pervert.
This is my torture chamber.
Deacon's like the young bad boy of the group.
I'm supposed to pay rent, but I don't.
The trouble with being a vampire is you have to be invited in.
Come in to the bar, please.
$4 is water.
Will you invite us in?
We need some fresh blood.
Hi, my name is Nick. I've been a vampire for 2 months.
My friend Richie's a bouncer. He'll invite us in.
Gentlemen, you are most welcome.
Nick is so much fun.
I'm a vampire.
Vampire! Vampire!
Such a dick.
Nick, why don't you use the front door? You want to draw attention to this house, hmm?
You've got a whole documentary crew following you around.
You let a vampire hunter into our house?
I don't let him in. I just gave him my email.
Kill you! I'm already dead! You will not eat the camera guy. Maybe one camera guy.
Turn the tape. Use your legs.
Wow!
What the f*** did you do for?
Hey, that was...
Don't swear. What are we?
Werewolves,
not swears.
When you're a vampire, you become very sexy.
My number 6 is also Brad's number 6. It's a What We Do in the Shadows, a documentary that follows three incredibly dark and evil vampires through New Zealand. Yeah, it's the first exposure I ever had to this. Is it a trope? I mean, I don't, because these guys always roll together. Whether it's Flight of the Conchords or the other stuff they've made. Anyways,
creative team.
Yeah, creative team. That's a better way to do it. It's just a camera crew follows these vampires in their house and the shenanigans they get into, and it's just really silly, but really well done.
Yeah, it's another crossover from my 2015 to this list. Wrestled with it being one higher than this, but I decided to tag team with you for it. But yeah, it's great. Like I remember seeing it at the Mayan when it came out, and yeah. You know, like I think the Twilight glimmer had still been like the prominent vampire thing.
The sparkle was still going.
Yeah, and this was refreshing to see like this making fun of vampires and
yeah, because you know they don't really show it in the trailer, but they also have that really old vampire who lives in the basement, the
Nosferatu style one. Yeah, they have this rivalry with werewolves, yeah. And then the curse like, don't, you're not a swearwolf.
Yeah, because they're supposed to be, the werewolves are, you know, just good guys or I don't know, good guys might not be the right word, but they're just, you know, trying not to give into the stereotype that werewolves are like these they're just these beasts.
It's like the sharks in Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
And speaking of beasts, there's this runner that which the Jemaine Clement one's like afraid of this one called the Beast, and it just turned out to be his ex.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So great. Yeah, and culminates at like this big gala event, and yeah. Yeah, just a lot of fun gags, just pointing fun at like vampire lore and bringing into the present day. And if you haven't been watching the television show on FX, it might be even better than this movie, given how much they're able to expand and play with it, introducing energy vampires and things like that. It's such a great,
it's a fun world to be in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially because vampires are always treated so seriously and, you know, so like sexy and this are just like normal dudes,
yeah,
who are just
living life
and out of time because they're all dressed stupid.
Living the afterlife. So yeah, definitely something people should check out if they haven't already.
For sure. Zach, number six.
My number six is a film by the always undervalued directorial ship of George Clooney.
You want to get into the war?
Monuments, man.
Time to put a team together and do our best to protect buildings, bridges, and art before the Nazis destroy everything.
How many men?
Six.
Jesus.
Well, with you at seven.
That's much better.
You want to go into a war zone with some architects and artists and tell our boys what they can and cannot
blow up. That's right.
Aren't we a little old for that?
Yes. We go through basic and then we wait for orders.
Basic?
A little help.
Basic training.
Oh boy.
If you destroy an entire generation of people's culture, it's as if they never existed.
We got company. Frank, we gotta go!
That's what Hitler wants. And it's the one thing we can't allow.
So we get to shoot some Nazis?
Your responsibility now.
I've never shot at anyone before.
He really wanted it all.
We better get it back.
What have you got? I seem to have stepped on a landmine.
Why would you do something like that?
What do you got?
Lieutenant here seems to have found himself on top of an unexploded mine.
Why would you do that?
You all have been spending too much time together.
So yeah, my number six is The Monuments Men. Didn't get to see this in the theater, got to it later. But it's not the best film he's made, but I do kind of like watching it. Like, it's a very intriguing World War II story that has its own power in a way. The idea of all these art professors being culled together to take back the art that the Nazis stole and pillaged. It's sort of episodic, and I think that might be one of the drawbacks of the film in a way. But I find myself fitting nicely in that world in terms of watching it. And it does give Clooney a chance to kind of work with a combo of different character actors that you're not expecting to necessarily see together or even separately. It's nice to watch Bob Balaban move around in a movie that's not necessarily Wes Anderson territory. I love that you've got John Dujardin and John Goodman running around that thing. There's a true sense of strange camaraderie that envelops itself around the movie. And the subplot with Kate Blanchett's character and her, trying to survive more or less is just absolutely, I think it's one of the strongest performances in the film.
Of course, it's Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just another reminder of like, Clooney has an interesting trick that he can pull, which is balancing comedy and true harrowing circumstances. And like, I think it's kind of endemified in that scene where they're searching for somebody else, and it turns out that the person that they've sought quote unquote shelter from is a Nazi follower and whatnot, and they have to confront that situation right in front of them. There's just interesting ways that he can kind of blend dark humor with a harrowing situation. It's not the strongest thing he's directed, but it's one that I do enjoy. Like, there's a reason I think why Netflix keeps licensing it out to show, because clearly it's got people who like rewatching it or watching it for the first time. So, yeah, Monuments Men, fantastic little flick.
My number five is a repeat as well. It is Whiplash. I love the driving force of this film. And it's not only the performances, are also indicative of the music they're playing, where it's a constant beat and it's constant back and forth between J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller. And it just moves really well. J.K. Simmons, I was introduced to him even before Spidey. But he's always been, I think Zach touched on it, he's always kind of always been a character actor and a supporting guy, and that he finally got recognition for this film, and he's continued to do it throughout his whole career. Is he never has to be the lead, but you are immediately transfixed by his performances. Mm-hmm. And he is the best type of actor to be in a film and supporting, whether it's wanting pictures of Spider-Man or in this being just a total bastard
or a demolition expert with IBS in a certain remake of a certain movie that may or may not be great.
But yeah, it's Whiplash is a really great film and people should see it.
Yeah.
Brad, number five.
My number five is Awesome.
Morning apartment, ready to start the day.
Jumping jacks, hit them. One, two, three. I am so pumped up. Yes, overpriced coffee.
That's $37.
Awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Oh my gosh, I love this song.
Is cool with the part of the team. Everything is awesome.
No, guys, wait up. Where am I?
Come with me if you want to not die.
What is happening?
You're the special. And the prophecy states that you're the most important person in the universe. That's you, right?
Yes. That's me.
Relax, everybody. I'm here.
Batman? Awesome!
Who are you here to see?
I'm here to see your butt.
Oh, my gosh.
Pow. Wham. First try.
My fellow master builders.
Hello!
Lord Business plans to end the world as we know it. There is yet one hope. The special has arisen.
I know what you're thinking. He is the least qualified person to lead us. And you are right.
A house divided against itself would be better than this.
Abraham Lincoln.
I'm not the special.
I'm just a regular, normal guy.
You have the ability to be the special because I believe in you.
Robots, destroy him!
Aloha, loser.
We'll wing it. It's a bad pun.
Take him to the melding chamber.
Isn't there supposed to also be a good cop?
Hi, buddy. Would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, actually.
Too bad.
We are entering your mind.
What?
I don't think he's ever had an original thought.
That's not true. Introducing the double-decker couch. So everyone could watch TV together and be buddies.
That is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Let me handle this. That idea is just the worst.
To the Batmobile.
Dang it.
To the invisible jet. Dang it.
So yeah, my number five is the Lego Movie.
Hell yeah.
One of two huge hits for Lord Miller this year. And yeah, before this came out, Lego announced that they were making a movie based on their toys, and I was like, how dare you? Like, more commercial bullshit. And then this movie came out, and like, okay, maybe toys can have movies.
Yeah, and it's clever because it also has a twist I don't think people were expecting. Mm. I know, I mean, I wasn't. The end of the film, I mean, we could spoil, it's 10 years old. When it goes to live action and you learn that the bad guy is actually a dad who's kind of lost his way, mm-hmm. Is kind of a nice little twist on what you don't expect at all in the film.
Sadly, though, the detriment of that ending, of that twist ending, means that you can't qualify for the best animated feature Oscar.
Yeah, had a catchy song and yeah, a clever movie with tons of Easter eggs and humor, and yeah, it's I don't know. It feels like there should have been more of these, but
yeah. You mentioned that before we started, and you're right. It does seem like,
and also kind of a unique animation style.
Oh yeah, because it has that jumpy kind of animation, like it's missing frames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a kind of a staple of their team, is they're always paying attention to the actual animation itself. Yeah, and like just all the little details that like Lego owners know, like the space guy with his like broken helmet.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Just in the legacy of that, you know, of Legos in general, just like littered through the background of this movie. Yeah, it's great.
I still love when Morgan Freeman's character has passed, but then he comes to Emmett in a vision and he's just on a fucking string as a ghost. Yeah. Ooh.
So yeah, my number five, the Lego Movie.
Sweet.
Zach, number five.
All right, number five is a repeat. It is John Wick. Yeah. Did not expect that movie to be as awesome as it was. I went on Festival Buzz alone and walked out incredibly satisfied. I think one of the beautiful parts of it is that it is such a stunt lover's film that you get to watch some pure cinema in action. And that's the case with most of the John Wick movies. One of the things I love about it is that the dialogue is virtually unimportant. Even in the world building, with the Mario coins and the Assassin Society and whatnot, they don't overexplain it. They don't overtax you with, you know, like deep lore. All you really need to know is like, oh, Baba Yaga, people want to kill him 'cause money. That's it. And as a result, you get some great stunt sequences to watch and just enjoy. And what I love about it is, as they've gone on, they've in a lot of ways paid homage to stunt history, with people like Buster Keaton being like projected on the walls of like one particular scene in, I think, John Wick 2 or 3. I could be wrong. And it's Chad Stahelski and David Lecht really know how to give an audience what they want. David Leitch in particular, like, he's a guy who I have yet to find a movie of his I haven't enjoyed yet. So I forgot that. I didn't know he directed Fall Guy until I went to Fall Guy, and I'm like, the fuck? So
yeah. Fall Guy, this year's most underrated film.
Agreed, yes. But anyway, yeah, John Wick. If you haven't seen it, do it.
Yeah. My number four is a film where the first time I was thinking maybe Marvel took too big of a leap, and then you watch the movie and not only is it great, these characters popped up in three of their own films and then were so important in the two Avengers films afterwards.
I come from Earth, a planet of outlaws.
My name is Peter Quill.
There's one other name you might know me by.
Star-Lord.
Who?
Well, Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw.
Guys? Forget it. So here we are. A thief, two thugs, an assassin, and a maniac. But we're not gonna stand by as evil wipes out the galaxy. I guess we're stuck together. Partners.
Are you telling me the fate of 12 billion people is in the hands of these criminals?
Oh, yeah. You know what I see? Losers. But life's giving us a chance.
To do what?
Something good. Something bad. A bit of both.
Oh, what the hell? I don't got that long a lifespan anyway.
They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
This might not be the best idea.
Hell yeah. Number four for me is Guardians of the Galaxy.
And me.
Nice. Directed by James Gunn, he comes from Troma, but what he brings is an energy to the films, and it also, when I think back and I see the trailer, how also the soundtrack like got out to everybody, and now, you know, they have the awesome mix, and I remember even my mother-in-law loved this movie because of the music and the characters, because these are... Yeah, I don't know if you even say they're C-level Marvel characters, because they're literally characters that aren't that popular but have grown to be some of the most beloved in the universe of the MCU. And when you watch this film again, you see how it started, and they each have their own purpose for coming together and then almost forced to be a team. And it's... you know, really fun. It's just a really good time at the movies.
Yeah. When I came out, I had no backstory, no prior knowledge of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So I, going into this cold, and it was just so much fun getting to know these characters. And James Gunn really has an understanding of how to like make a movie about misfits coming together between this and the Suicide Squad. It's gonna be interesting to see how he tackles a solo hero,
yeah,
which clearly is populating with a bunch of C and D list characters. Yeah,
but Superman, you know, is, I mean, that's the pinnacle of superheroes.
Yeah.
So yeah, but this film has just it's just so fun, and you know, my knowledge, even though I'm a comic guy, of the Guardians of the Galaxy was not that much. I have a couple Spider-Man Marvel team ups with them in it, but I mean, obviously, I knew who Rocket Raccoon is just because he's just so goofy. If you're in comics, you kind of know who he is.
I remember when they announced this, I was still in film school, and the two things I heard out of my mouth was, who the fuck are these, and what's a tree doing here?
and to make it work is pretty impressive, because But, you know, I guess maybe that's the appeal of you don't know the characters as well, so you can kind of take chances on them. And, you know, they're reluctant heroes. They're not just people that want to be heroes. They're not Spider-Man who has a purpose, or, you know,
Captain America
or Iron Man. They're just forced into the situation and they have to discover being a hero.
Did they greenlight this solely around the prospect of the Thanos thing, or was it kind of just like, no, this is on our docket, we're gonna give this a shot?
You know, I have no idea the backstory behind it. I might know it, but I don't remember. I guess it'd be worth digging into, because it's
like the only business decision that I can think of pre these characters working cinematically is like, well, Thanos, because Gamora and whatnot, Nebula. So
it's hard to tell like what, how early on they had their map planned out for Thanos.
Yeah.
And what would work and what would not. Because it's pretty risky to, like, at this point, like 2014, you know, obviously the Avengers was a hit, and most of the solo movies were pretty, like, they weren't huge blockbusters, but they did decent business.
Yeah.
Compared to other superhero, but, like, given the track record of superhero movies through Warner Brothers and some of the Fox stuff, it is... I think one of the most impressive things about the Marvel Studios is that how they were able to elevate their lesser known characters
by necessity, rather than desire. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they couldn't really play with their A-listers, cause they were owned by other people.
Yeah. I know, I've said it multiple times on this podcast, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe really makes their characters earn their spot.
Yep.
And I think that's where DC kind of lost their way. Is the characters didn't earn it. And here you're giving these characters that are lesser known, but time to shine, but you're letting it breathe, you know, because the Guardians show up in the Avengers movie, but that's not till after Volume 2. So you know what they're about and you know the characters already. So you expect them to behave a certain way and you know what's important to them. It's just a testament to how it's going to work out, because you saw Marvel stumble with it, because, you know, they had all these plans for Kang the Conqueror, and then you have an asshole who decides he's going to beat up women and they have to change their trajectory. So it's a big risk, and it's still a big risk by planning so many movies so far out. Guardians of the Galaxy, an unexpected, wonderful film.
I'm sure they had like grand plans for Black Panther, and then Curtail does too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman. Such a great presence on screen.
So my number four, also Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nice. Zach, your number four.
My number four is Steve Carell's funniest movie.
Do you have any idea who I am? Some rich guy calls you on the phone. I wanted to speak with you about what you hope to achieve. What do you hope to achieve, Mark?
I want to be the best in the world.
Good.
There's a key for you. Also, big house is off limits.
Okay.
Coach DuPont has a vision. He would like Foxcatcher to be the official training site for the national team.
What's he get out of all this?
What are you thinking? This is it. This is all that we've ever wanted.
Mark, you have been living in your brother's shadow your entire life. It's your time now.
Promise you, I'll give you everything I have.
I am leading men, and I am giving America hope.
I spent my lifetime looking for a father, and I found one in John DuPont.
It doesn't matter. The sport of wrestling is a low sport, and I don't like to see you being low.
Why is there nobody in the gym?
Yeah, no, I gave.
You ungrateful ape. Mark.
He's a kid.
Good.
I don't need your help.
Am I telling what's going on with you and DuPont?
Hey, what did I just say?
Coach is a father. Coach is a mentor. Coach has
great power on an athlete's life. Mark.
Yeah, my number four is Foxcatcher, a hilarious, rip-roaring comedy. No.
Steve Carell at his funniest.
Yeah, I know. Oh,
I feel like Michael Scott.
Oh, yeah. When he shoots Dave Schultz, it's just pure hilarity.
Yeah.
No, this is a very dark, gripping drama. I would argue a suspenseful thriller in a lot of respects about the Schultz brothers and the Olympic qualifying team Foxcatcher, run by John DuPont, who fucking lost shit and killed Dave. It's so weird. This was the last film I saw in 2014, and my dad took me to it. And I was not in a very good place, so it was not the greatest film to go watch, but I wanted to go watch it. I was fucking stunned by everything I was watching on screen, and it fully made me appreciate the power that Bennett Miller has as a director. He's somebody who doesn't direct that often. Capote, Moneyball, every time he has come out with something, it's been a true story that has managed to compel and captivate in a way that I don't. The only other biopic filmmakers that I would compare his power to are Karaszewski and Alexander, who write great biopics, but in a different milieu. Steve Carell is transformative in this film. I wish he would do more stuff like this, where it's extremely risk taking and not necessarily towing the line between comedy and genre drama. Mark Ruffalo is fantastic in it. I will say Channing Tatum didn't get as much praise for this film as I think he should have, because he has to carry a lot of this on his shoulder. And it's similar in my mind to some folks like John David Washington and Black Klansman, where sometimes you overlook them because they are the central focus character. And if they're not wowing you in another way, then it's hard to see the power that they have. But Channing Tatum in this film takes a lot of abuse from Jean DuPont. He takes a lot of egotistical bruising when being compared to his brother. And I do think that reserved anger that almost comes from Tatum's physicality is something that is absolutely essential to the film. And without it, it doesn't work.
Yeah. We don't see him because he's us. Like,
exactly. Yes.
He's the gateway for the audience to go through the story.
Exactly. He represents every single anger, fear, and frustration that we've ever felt, not leveling up to somebody else. And I think the final moments of that film with John DuPont, like, asking about, like, Dave right before he shoots him, like, just like confronting him, it's just one of the most fucking haunting thoughts ever. And Bennett shoots it from afar. He does not go in close for it in the same way that other filmmakers might. And the fact that it's out on that DuPont estate with the snow and whatnot is just it's fucking unnerving. So yeah, if nobody's ever seen Foxcatcher, you should. It's a good, gripping thriller. Not the funny thing that I mentioned earlier. That was a joke. But this movie, not a joke. Brilliant.
The wrestling, what a stupid thing to kill someone over.
Yeah.
Number three for me is one of my favorite actors, and this is one of my favorite films he's done. The marketing really messed up this film because it should have focused on how badass Emily Blunt is and how the concept shouldn't work. The film is amazing.
What I am about to tell you sounds crazy, but you have to listen to me. Your very lives depend on it.
This is not the end.
You see, this isn't the first time. Now, we've had this conversation. What day is it?
Judgment Day. You just came in with the fresh recruits.
This is not the end.
The invasion will fail, along with every soldier you are sending. We lose everything.
Come find me when you wake up!
You do know what's happening to me.
What happened to you happened to me. You hijacked their power. I need your help.
With what exactly?
Winning the war. We can do this. Just come here every day and I'll train you.
No matter what I do, this is as far as you go.
Why does it matter what happens to me?
I'm not a soldier.
Of course you're not. You're a weapon.
My number three film is The Edge of Tomorrow, or as it's commonly known now, Live, Die, Repeat. The film is really fascinating because Tom Cruise plays a major in this war against an alien invasion that is basically wiping out humanity. And what the trailer doesn't tell you is he is a coward. And he is given this power through the blood of the alien that allows him to relive the same day over and over and over again until he dies. And he figures out that there's a woman named Rita, who is a colonel, and she is the hero of a battle because she had the same, I don't know if you'd say it's a gift, but she got it, but she lost it. And now he has it, so he's working to get past this basically a Normandy invasion style battle. And what's really cool about this film is, like I said, Tom Cruise starts off as not a hero. He doesn't want to be there, but he learns to be one. And what this trailer and what is glossed over in this film too is the emotional toll that Tom Cruise's character, Bill Gage, goes through, reliving his own death, and not only his death, but Rita's death over and over and over and over and over again. And there's a really great moment, maybe about 30, 40 minutes into the film, where he says, this is the farthest we've gotten. And you realize that he's seen this woman die hundreds of times, and he's died hundreds of times, and they're no closer into defeating the enemy. Really clever script, really clever way it's shot. It's one of Tom Cruise's best movies that is kind of under the radar that they always talk about making a sequel to. But you know, Tom Cruise, I think, always seems to have four or five movies that he's working on at the same time, and he kind of picks what he's going to do. And he's been making these last two Mission Impossible movies for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. So,
and then he goes into Magnolia 2 right after that. You know,
yeah.
It's crazy.
So, yeah, number three is Edge of Tomorrow.
You know, I joke, but what would a Magnolia sequel look like?
I don't know. It's
PTA, call me. Let's workshop this.
Brad, you're number three.
My number three is a whimsical murder mystery.
Why do you want to be a lobby boy?
Who wouldn't? At the Grand Budapest, sir.
And so my life began. Junior lobby boy in training under the strict command of Monsieur Gustave H. Many of the hotel's most valued and distinguished guests came for him.
I love you.
I love you. She was dynamite in the sack, by the way.
She was 84.
I've had older.
This was also when I met Agatha.
She's charming. She's so charming.
Is he flirting with you?
Yes.
I approve of this union.
I became his pupil, and he was to be my counselor and guardian.
The police are here.
Tell them I'll be right down.
She's been murdered, and you think I did it.
Hey! Stop!
You're looking so well, darling, you really are. I don't know what sort of cream they've put on you down at the morgue, but I want some.
This is Madame D's last will and testament. To Sir Gustav H., I bequeath a painting known as Boy with Apple.
Wow.
What?
Who's Gustav H.?
I'm afraid that's me, darling.
If I learn you ever once laid a finger on my mother's body, living or dead...
I go to bed with all my friends.
We need to make a plan for your survival. Hide this. It's in code and you might need a magnifying glass to read it, but it tells you exactly where and how to find Boy with Apple.
I'm a baker. I'm not a fence, if that's the term.
I want roadblocks at every junction for 50 kilometers. I want rail blocks at every train station for 100 kilometers.
Get in!
I want 50 men and 10 bloodhounds ready in 5 minutes.
Can't arrest him simply because he's a bloody immigrant.
Take your hands off my lobby boy!
Have you ever been questioned by the authorities?
Yes, on one occasion.
What?
I was arrested and tortured by the rebel militia after the desert uprising.
Right. Well, you know the drill then. Zip it.
So there, my number three is the Grand Budapest Hotel. Just a fun caper. One of Wes Anderson's funniest films, and it's gorgeous to look at. And
yeah, I was talking while I was playing that it's every time I watch one of his trailers, I really want to watch the movie.
Yeah,
just because I love being sucked into his world, and it's just fun. And you've been setting us up with the sweeper in this DVD menu with Adrian Brody's moment, and it's a little clever bit in the film, and yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah, sharp, witty. Love the production design of it. And I remember this year, like, I think this is the most successful movie because I think it played at the Esquire for like 7 months.
Wow.
It was pretty popular.
I think it's also the last time Anderson's had any like robust nominations with the Oscars, because after that it's only his animated films.
Yeah, I mean, he won for Henry Sugar and didn't show up, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grand Budapest Hotel. It's a fun one, and one of my favorites from that year.
Yeah. Nice. Zach?
All right, my number three was my number one, only because it doesn't... I'm in a different phase in my life, but I still maintain that this film is a master grandiose horror film, and here it is.
Always do sober what you do drunk. That'll teach you to keep your mouth shut.
Hemingway said that.
Yes, he did. And he said it to me.
I don't want you to go to Canada tomorrow.
It's for the podcast. It's what I do. I travel around and I interview weird or interesting people.
So look out, you crazy Canucks!
Wandering Wallace takes a raunchy road trip up to the Great White North.
Hello. I'm an old man who has enjoyed a long and storied life at sea. And after eons of oceanic adventure, I know I do not wish to spend my remaining years alone while I have such stories to share.
How far is Bifrost from here?
It's about 2 hours from here.
It's about 2 hours away.
I hate American guys.
Good evening.
It's nice to meet you.
Could I interest you in some tea?
So what happened after the boat sank?
I was alone. And then something very swift and frightening moved by me.
A walrus saved your life?
The walrus is far more evolved than any man I've ever known. Present company included.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Would you?
There. It'll be all right, Mr. Tuff.
He hasn't called me in 3 days. I'm worried. Morris!
Why are you doing this?
Are you really mourning your humanity? I don't understand. Who in the hell would want to be human?
My number three is Tusk. Kevin Smith's second stab at horror, although definitely a little bit more on the... I've come to realize it's more of a campier Roger Corman kind of affair in not just the way it's executing its main premise, but also Michael Parks' performance is sort of like a Vincent Price-esque kind of like over-the-top horror figure. When I was in the throes of alcoholism, I saw this film 8 times, and it was around the 8th viewing where I was relating too much to the Justin Long character in terms of feeling ugly on the inside, and if I don't do something about it, I'll be ugly on the outside. So it meant something to me then. Nowadays, I haven't watched the film in a long time, but I've seen it enough to where I know it frontwards and backwards. And something that still sticks out to my mind is that third act and how Michael Parks just goes for broke. Here's a man who's been through the gamut of Hollywood history, whether it's film or television, and this ends up being pretty much his swan song, more or less. And it's one of those amazing last films to kind of go out on, where he manages to absolutely sell himself as this prince of terror that he only really got 2 movies to do, this and Red State, where he is just the epitome of some form of evil or some form of twisted individual. And it's, I don't know if this is the, I don't think this is the first, is this the first film where Justin Long is basically a Scream King? Because
no, he was in Jeepers Creepers.
Jeepers Creepers. Okay, then. So this is one of those films on the journey to where I know I still haven't seen Barbarian yet.
Should.
But when that came out, everybody was starting to declare him the Scream King, and I'm just like, well, a lot of that journey continues with Tusk. So, we were talking about it during the trailer. This is an A24 movie. So I want A24 nerds out there to understand that you include all of it, not just some of it.
I think it's better than Hereditary, so.
I enjoy thinking about it more than Hereditary, that's for sure.
Very audacious, this film.
Also, one of the best uncomfortable laughs in any theater I've ever been in was when I went to go see this the first time and when you finally see what the walrus looks like.
Yep.
It was the loudest reaction. The only other loud reaction I've heard since then was the loud applause during America Ferrera's monologue in Barbie. I know that's a big leap, but that's how far we've come. If anybody hasn't watched this film, check it out. I keep thinking about it, but like the fact that this all started with a goofy podcast joke that between him and Scott Mosier
that you can listen to during the credits.
Yeah, it's amazing the trajectory it took from there to that point. And it's a horror film that I wish would get mentioned more often on like film, like on social media. Like I don't see a lot of people like trying to jump into it, but they really should. It's a good like grotesque, grungy old kind of like shocking for shocking's sake that also lends into some comedy.
So, one of my favorite things is when Michael Parks puts on his own walrus costume, just pops into frame, goes,
"I know.
Now you must fight me,
or you will die."
Yeah, that's what most of what I remember. I haven't seen it since the theater. That's what I remember.
It's also strangely moving, but also incredibly creepy when he's like waiting with him in the water and explaining his fucking disturbance.
It's really a shame. So A24 is now putting out like a lot of their prestige movies on their own Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And like a lot of these early A24s like this aren't included in that. It's a really kind of a bummer.
Is it? I don't wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that Lionsgate was putting out a lot of stuff for them exclusively for a while.
Maybe. Yeah.
Huh? Lionsgate doesn't necessarily like to play nice with boutique labels.
They should give the license back so they can put these old ones out.
Lionsgate and A24. I want a 2-disc deluxe version of Tusk. Bookbound, like the fucking Midsommar one. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, check out Tusk. It's pretty much, it's streaming a lot in various places up and down. Like, I know HBO Max had it for a minute.
My number two film was my number one film, and I don't do this very often.
This is shocking. Shocking, I tell you.
But it still makes me cry when I watch it multiple times. And it'll always be always high on my list just because of who it is.
Every day I wake up knowing that the more people I try to save, the more enemies I will make. And it's just a matter of time before I face those with more power can overcome.
I'm so sorry I'm late.
I had a traffic thing.
Did your traffic jam have anything to do with being, I don't know, shot at by machine guns?
Yeah. Oh, that was implied. That was implying that.
Peter Parker. Harry Osborn.
You're gonna want to see this.
Oscorp.
Get you under surveillance.
Why?
Isn't that the question of the day?
There's something you're not telling me, Aunt May.
I once told you that secrets have a cost. The truth does, too.
My name is Richard Parker. I have discovered what Oscorp was going to use my research for. I have a responsibility to protect the world from what I know they're capable of.
What is all this?
The future.
We literally can change the world. What about Peter?
Not everyone has a happy ending.
This is bigger than you, Peter.
I made a choice. This is my path.
So everyone in the city will know how it feels to live in a world without power, without mercy, without Spider-Man.
Yeah, my number two film is The Amazing Spider-Man number two. Lots of great moments in this film as a Spider-Man fan. The narrative, unfortunately, suffers a lot in it of trying to put too much into the film. But there is some really great standout moments. One, the special effects in it are still incredible. When he fights Electro in Times Square is so amazing. It how they explain his spider sense and how he saves people from being electrocuted is great. His chemistry with Emma Stone, Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone is second to none. There's enough in this movie that I adore it.
You know, we're saying for years when they do superhero movies like this, they should open the movie by fighting like a lower level villain.
Yeah.
And they do that with the Rhino here.
They do with Paul Giamatti as a Rhino who it started as a joke on Conan O'Brien where he said he liked the Rhino and then they decided they were going to cast him as the Rhino. There's some great moments, even his moments with Harry Osborn, who I always thought was a great villain because he's not really a bad guy. He's just bad in his situation. Yeah. But you know, it took 7 years for them to redeem some of the moments in this film and have payoff for it, whether it's Gwen Stacy dying or who Peter was after all of this is never really touched on in this film. And then they give him the opportunity in No Way Home to avenge things, you know. But it's still a Spider-Man movie to me, and it'd have to be complete utter garbage for me to not even put it anywhere near the top of my list. And this film is not. And I think when people rewatch it now, they look at it with kinder eyes.
I haven't rewatched it since, but since No Way Home, my estimation of it has definitely increased.
Yeah, it's just bogged down with Sony trying to do way too much.
The Sinister Six stuff is the thing I won't forgive. I'm just like, why are you trying to stuff shit like this?
Yeah, because that guy in, you know, in the first Amazing Spider-Man, I always thought the dude in the hat was going to be Norman Osborn.
Right.
And you learn that it's not Norman Osborn. It's just some random dude. Mm-hmm. But if you want to handle the Sinister Six the right, well, I mean, it's only five of them. But, I mean, No Way Home just spins them into the narrative very well. Here it's tacked on.
Yeah.
But there's still some great moments in it, and it's wonderfully shot, and it's still Spider-Man, so it's still great. Hmm. Brad, number two.
My number two is so fucking funny.
A relationship is something that requires constant work.
Doc, I just feel like sometimes he's not even trying anymore.
Seriously, he's okay. Clingy, he's terrified of being by himself. Given all these strong feelings, why don't you hold hands? He's literally reaching out for you.
I won't hold my hand. You gotta interlock it, though. If you don't interlock it, you might as well just be friends. And not partners.
How you bitches like Jump Street now?
Hey,
I got a big ass raise to babysit you two fuckers again.
Going back to high school?
No, you dumb motherfucker. Your ass look like you about 50. You going to MC State.
Play on, play.
Why every time you speak, I want to throw the fuck up?
Hot plate.
Beanbag chair.
Hilarious shirt that signals we drink alcohol.
Are you two fucking around in school again? It's the same case. Do the same thing.
It's not exactly the same case because one of us got laid last night.
We're talking missionary. We're talking missionary.
Missionary?
We're talking when I'm on top and she's on her back.
Damn! Get the fuck back to work.
We need an expert to consult.
I heard someone's bringing a shit ton of that stuff down to Puerto Mexico for spring break.
That's your lead, motherfucker.
I know, but we don't know who it is.
We don't know who it is.
That's you.
That doesn't sound anything like me.
It's not you.
Eric! Close your eyes and tell me who's talking right now.
Yeah.
That's Schmidt being a little bitch.
Look, you gotta take your thing to the next level, guys.
Spring break, motherfucker.
A grenade.
You never know.
Oh, why are you gonna put it there?
Feels right.
Orale, vato. Hey, my partner here, he wanna see that product.
Where'd you find this gringo, man? The fucking Mumford & Sons concert and shit?
Remember me? I'm your best nightmare. I'm your worst nightmare. Go, go!
The Lambo in
the back.
Oh, no.
Get me!
No!
What?
No!
What were you doing?
What am I doing?
Why'd you try to kiss me?
I didn't fucking try and kiss you! No, you're leaning in again!
I didn't want to kiss!
This is the most uncomfortable fist fight I've ever been in.
Hey, listen, there's a grenade in my shorts!
Is that it?
That's my dick!
What about that?
That's my dick also!
What the? Police in the hood!
So yeah, my number two is 22 Jump Street. Just makes me laugh every time I watch it. Doesn't get old. I love how they change it up. It's, you know, they're doing this, supposed to be doing the same movie as last time, but they, Lord and Miller are much more creative, and they kind of use this movie to also poke fun at sequels.
Yeah.
One of the best things is how they take the dynamic of these two characters from the original and then flip-flop it to where this time Jenko is the popular one and he's having way more fun in school. Eventually realizes that meeting someone who's exactly like you isn't as fun as it's cracked up to be. And then also that, like, a really good misdirect in the mystery of how, like, for the longest time they're like following one suspect and then realizing that like they're only doing that because of how they were introduced to the case. And then of course the ending with like all the sequel ideas is amazing. Yeah, just tons of great jokes throughout. And
at one point, one of those sequel ideas was they were trying to develop it, which was them meeting Men in Black.
Well, that's actually not one of the screens at the end, but that was an idea.
Yeah.
I wish they'd gone through with that, but yeah, I wish they would do more with this universe.
I can't believe it's been 10 years since there's been one.
I know. Like, both of them did really well, and they just didn't do anything after that. Yeah, so 22 Jump Street. It's one of my favorites.
Hell yeah. Zach?
Oh, my number two is Cinema.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier. He's a ghost. You'll never find him.
I joined SHIELD to protect people.
Captain, to build a better world sometimes means tearing the old one down.
And that makes enemies.
Is one step.
People are gonna die. I can't let that happen.
Captain America needs my help.
When do we start?
We just did.
The price of freedom is high. And it's a price I'm willing to pay.
You told me not to trust anyone. This is how it ends. Everything goes.
Looks like you're giving the orders now, Captain.
Damn right.
We know the good guys from the bad guys. If they're shooting at you, they're bad.
I guess I actually can't believe you have a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie this high.
I mean, I meant what I said. I wasn't making a pithy joke at the top. It's cinema. All of these fucking movies are cinema. Settle down, art freaks. This is, it's not my favorite MCU film, because I think I've talked about this before, but I still adore First Avenger the most because of its kitsch value, the 40s, whatnot. You know, I like that. This one is probably objectively the best Marvel film in the MCU, in terms of, like, striking the balance between a comic book movie and what you would expect out of a Hollywood movie in a pre-Marvel world.
Yeah, it's my number one movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a political thriller.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that Captain America is part of it.
Yeah.
But
it ends up being the most consequential.
Oh, yeah. The groundwork that's laid in this film is the rest of Captain America and Iron Man's story, really. You have Robert Redford saying Hell Hydra, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that you got this icon to just say this. I remember thinking, going like, oh my God, like he is selling it beautifully. This is amazing.
But, you know, one of the cool aspects of Captain America, in my opinion, is sometimes when he questions what America is, mm-hmm. and what it represents. And in this film, he really does. And he's fighting for, you know, the Superman, the truth, justice, and the American way. But what happens when that is turned on its head and there is the real enemy within? And what do you do to counteract that? And when he does this, he becomes a fugitive. It sets up, you know, Civil War and then Infinity War, where he isn't perceived as being the good guy when he really is the good guy. And how do you fight that? And how do you fight someone that's so powerful as Pierce? And you realize that his values are what an idealistic version of America is someone who's going to fight for who's what's right, and someone who's going to fight for the little man and fight for people that don't have a choice. Because, you know, the story of Bucky in this is actually pretty sad. You know, he died in World War II, and then he's brought back to life, and he's being manipulated to do biddings for evil. And his rehabilitation, I mean, when I watch that now and you see where Captain America is now, where it's actually Anthony Mackie's no longer the Falcon, he is Captain America, in 10 years, how it's just turned on its head. The movie's incredible. The Russos proved that they are the right architects for this universe.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking about it too, also from a filmmaking standpoint, just how the Russos aesthetically drew upon some lovely moments of film history from the 70s, especially. It's a 70s political thriller, mm-hmm. if you want to get like super specific. But there's like certain moments that are not strictly based around the comic book lore and stuff, but they're just great cinema scenes outside of that lore. Now, like in the lore with with Zola being a brain in a computer is like an eerie image, mm-hmm. That I still think about when I think of what is the MCU, what do you think of? And I'm like, well, I think about that reveal, and then I think about Tony snapping his fingers. like those, they're in tandem with each other. But one of the most startling scenes in any Marvel thing ever, cinematic universe or Fox canon, whatever, is when the Winter Soldier comes to visit Pierce, and it's fully understood how deep and embedded Pierce is, and that maid comes back, mm-hmm. for her stuff, and Pierce just goes, "Oh, Lupita, I wish you had knocked," and has to shoot her. Like, it's one of the most darkest things I've ever seen in any comic book thing, you know, outside of what's supposed to be an R-rated affair, you know?
Yep.
And it slaps on all fronts. And that action sequence where they're trying to get Nick Fury, they're gunning down Nick Fury in that car and whatnot, and the way he's got to wait for the bullets to hit the glass of the car so much before he can finally go out and like go at it with his little machine gun inside the car, it's a great little moment of tension being built and built up and whatnot.
Yep.
Yeah, I love it. I still love it. It kind of makes me want to go back through. I like going through the Captain America perspective when I go through the MCU sometimes, where it's like a mini marathon, more mm-hmm. or less. And this is one of the films that makes me want to do it each time, because I'm like, oh, cool, I get to watch Winter Soldier again.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Brad, number one.
Well, my number one, I'm really disappointed in you guys that you didn't have this on your list. I thought you were my friends. You're clearly not. You've had 10 years to rectify your list and you blew it. So
wait, I have friends?
Go fuck yourselves.
I take it you took care of the reporter?
We're just not a problem. We have a new one. The evidence. Two floors and a damn van acquired it.
In a couple hours, Mayor Nob is gonna blow up Paradise Stadium to build his new man.
I'm in the pulpit.
You're my sister from the future?
When I learned that Mayor Nob was gonna have you murdered to prevent evidence of his corruption from getting out, I defected from the time force to come back and save you.
Sloan's with me. Sudden death.
Hand over the file, or I'll spill your blood and take it from you.
You, what are you?
It's an H-800. Killer cyborg!
Run for your life!
What happened here?
Justice. Justice happened here.
Your justice is gross.
Yeah, I know.
You are more despicable than I even realized. I love it.
How can somebody so sleazy be in charge of the city? I'll make sure Nob gets what he deserves.
I own this city!
Bon voyage.
I ain't shit. This is John Clyde's damn band, son. Where they use the city's money to expand layers.
Get the damn band!
So yeah, my number one is still my favorite movie from this year, my own movie, Jean-Claude Van Damme's Damn Van.
I don't know. I mean, in the Brad Hake cinematic oeuvre, I'm still a fan of Catastrophe the most.
What'd you say, Ryan?
I still can't believe it's been 10 years. You posted that the other day. I go, holy shit.
I know. I went all November 10th, just not remembering. And then I woke up on the 11th being like, fuck, I totally missed the anniversary. I've been like building up to it and just like, boop. Forgot. But yeah, sometimes I can't believe I made this movie. It just, like, I look at the trailer again and just be like, how did we ever do, like, I feel like I couldn't do half that stuff now. It just seems way too complicated. I don't know how we accomplished it, but yeah, my favorite thing from 2014 was making that movie. It was so much fun. I think it's a great film.
Just quickly recap, how did this start? It was like a contest to put Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's a Funny or Die contest.
Yeah, we found out very late in the contest schedule that Funny or Die was, you know, you could win a bunch of random prizes if you take their green screen footage of Van Damme doing generic action stuff and then crafting a 2-minute short around it and then submitting it. And we're like, well, we're not going to make the deadline and it's probably not going to win anyway. So let's just take that footage and do our own thing. And yeah, we spent like the next 8 to 9 months making this movie.
I was talking to a friend of mine about like what we appreciate and like in terms of film, like in how it's, you know, everybody's got their own tastes or finds their own expertise. And one of the things that I mentioned, like when I mentioned that you made this film, they kind of giggled a little bit about it, and I'm like, yeah, well, you say that, but in the process, Brad's become a bit of a Van Damme scholar in his own right, in such a way that I didn't think it was something I needed and or would love hearing about every time you've reviewed another Van Damme film on this show or just in conversation.
When I started out, like, I think I'd watched Bloodsport and Street Fighter and a couple of other ones, mm-hmm. and yeah, as we're making the movie, I acquired all the other films and watched them all and tried to insert things into the script where I could. But when I first wrote the script and started, I just went through IMDb and just like character name, title, work those things into the movie. I didn't really have this vast knowledge of his catalog.
And you I was happy to participate in part of it with James one day outside of Rooster Cat. I think we did the driving the homeless people out of the city thing, and I had a tinfoil hat on. It was like one of those like fond memories that I still have where I'm just like, yeah, you know, that period of my life wasn't all that bad. I did get to do stuff like this. So,
you mentioned that as like a scary like precursor to the future. We always talk about like the mayor's evil and he is running homeless people out of town and yeah.
Yep.
Super corrupt and like, man, a lot of our jokes kind of came to pass.
Are you going to do a screening of it?
Probably not. Mm-hmm. I think the appeal is worn off for a lot of other people. It was going to be at Radley Fest, but obviously that didn't materialize. So,
Something I also liked about it is that you kept at it in a way where you were developing mythology within it, and that's something that you can't like falsify that. Like that is like the genuine definition of the spark of imagination in a lot of ways. And it's like one of those things where like I'll go out on a limb and like I'll compare you to Orson Welles in a way because you took the time, you kept adding where you knew you needed to add, and you fleshed out something over time to create what you ended up creating. And that's something he did too. So I think it's like one of those like projects that when I think about it, anytime I hear that fucking soundtrack or I look at it in my CD collection, which is extremely limited compared to the DVD and Blu-ray collection, I'm like, man, that is a fucking banger soundtrack from a banger short film that my banger friend made.
Yeah.
But don't worry, I won't bang you.
Yeah, thank you. yeah, like it wasn't just me, like a lot of other people put it together and really did equally like great work. And I do have like, it bums me out that I do have ideas for like sequels and things and like other projects to do based on it that will probably never happen. So yeah,
never say never.
Yeah, we'll see. It's getting old there. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like specifically this one, I do have an idea for a stage version.
Oh my fucking God. Really?
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to take some work, but anyway, yeah, as far as 2014 goes, this is the best thing about it for me.
Nice.
Zach,
my number one,
your number one film.
My number one is a repeat, Grand Budapest Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
This for me is the best Wes Anderson movie. Not just because it is incredibly funny, incredibly crafted, incredibly elaborate and meticulous as I would expect Mr. Anderson to be at this point. And it's not even the shifting aspect ratios or anything. It actually has to do with, I think, the last 10 or so minutes of this movie is some of the most heartbreaking stuff I've ever seen. In such a very profound, tragicomic way. The best way that I can describe it is, like, I feel about this film the same way I feel through some of the darker moments in Ernst Lubitsch's To Be or Not to Be, where there is something so... it's going to punch you right in the fucking gut, but it doesn't negate the humor you experienced. And the way he's sort of dealing with... you know, the Nazi conquering of Eastern Europe, of Europe, in a way that is like kind of like coded to a certain extent, because there's nothing specific in there, but it, you know right away what's going on. And when you get to the very end and Mr. Gustav is killed, it ruins you a little bit, because you've been on the most amazing journey with this rapscallion lead concierge of a hotel through what is very much a light murder mystery, and then it takes on a different gravity. And it's not something that's abrupt. It's not something that's forced. It's something that is earned, because he laid it in throughout the entirety of the piece that built you up to this point. Also, one of my favorite memories from a very dark time in my life was us. I'd already seen the movie, but you and I were on our way to go watch 1989 Batman at the Esquire, and you were dressed as Batman. But before that, we went to Ryan's house, and we reviewed the Grand Budapest Hotel, and you were playing Batman.
I am a method actor.
It is.
I stay in character.
It is one of my favorite memories of this podcast and being a part of it was...
Did someone just come inside? Oh, shit. It's Batman, guys.
Batman? Oh, my God. I haven't seen you in a while, buddy. How have you been?
I've been depressed, as always.
Have you been retired for 8 years?
A little bit.
Okay.
You know, it's been a rough go over at Warner Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And,
just don't tell me about how your parents died again.
You see, my parents died.
Ah, damn. That story never gets old.
It comforts me to sit in my mansion and think about it.
Yeah. Let me ask
over
you.
Over and over and over.
Let me ask you. Vowing
vengeance against crime.
Do you think you could vow vengeance against David Zaslav and his handling of the company? Or is that something a little bit out of your reach?
It'll be taken care of.
It will? Oh, good. Can you get Hornblows at Midnight out in 4K?
What?
It's a Jack Benny movie, Batman. You know who Jack Benny is, don't you?
I don't care about that. All I care about is justice.
Well, Jack Benny is justice for the purposes of what I'm requesting, which is get a 4K of it out there after you beat up Zaslav, of course, which is the real justice, but side justice is also good.
I don't see how this strikes fear in the night.
Just trust me, it does. It totally does. Ryan, back me up. Like, we'll also get you a 4K of Big Brown Eyes or whatever, the Cary Grant movie.
All right, Alfred's calling me. I got to go.
Okay. All right. Well, bye, Batman. It was great seeing
Wait
you.
Wait a minute.
See you in 10 years.
Alfred? Batman's Bruce Wayne?
Yeah. Should we tell anybody, Ryan?
I'm already gone. There's no answer.
But yeah, number one.
That was really cool of Batman to show up.
Yes,
after 10 years.
Thanks, Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's looking great, you know? I kind of wish he would have brought... I wish he would have brought his friend Colin Farrell, but I guess he was just too busy.
They're friends?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh. I mean, they're hanging around that Warner Brothers lot all day, right?
Not 89 Batman.
Not 89 Batman? Oh, that's true.
Definitely that new guy.
Why didn't he bring Jack Nicholson? Or is he too busy hanging out in Aspen?
Is that where Jack Nicholson hangs out? I don't know.
I don't know. I think he has a house up there.
He's just enjoying not working.
He's enjoying being an old man, despite what the tabloids keep claiming.
He's got that Batman 89 money.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Anywho.
I got a couple of lists sent to me.
Did you?
Okay.
I did. Corinne just sent me a text message. She said,
I love British movies in anime.
Okay, Batman, can you come back? I want you to be a Ryan for being me.
Oh, tea and monarchy. Yeah. Oh, make sure there's tea and scrumpets and fucking monarchies and Monty Python. You're so funny.
Yeah, this is my new favorite Monty Python sketch is you just doing this.
Corinne sent my top 10 in no particular order. Captain America, The Winter Soldier. The Wind Rises, which is beautifully animated.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Devil's Knot, which is a tough watch.
Yep.
Edge of Tomorrow. How to Train Your Dragon 2. Guardians of the Galaxy. Look at her put the guest on here. That was on mine previously.
Yeah.
Dan Stevens carrying a fucking keg through a house. Big Hero 6, which is a really underrated Disney film. The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies. And she also put on here Annie. I totally forgot they remade Annie. And I, you know, just Hard Knock Life, I guess.
That was her number one?
No particular order.
Okay. You know what, Ryan? You take that joke into tomorrow. After all, it's only a day away. You'll be able to tell it again.
You know what? I will. And I also received one from Carol. She said, hello, real nerds. Hope you all are well. 2014 wasn't as exciting as I thought it would be. I have a feeling that my list is going to be very different than yours. John Wick is not a favorite of mine, and I did not see It Follows.
Oh, shot fired.
Those are two mine.
I feel attacked.
I do regret that we haven't seen Whiplash. You know, that's one you should probably see.
Yeah.
Carol.
I would recommend that one, not It Follows. number 10, The Imitation Game, based on the true story about Alan Turing, who is asked to crack Nazi codes thought to be unbreakable. Also stars Keira Knightley. Amazing story, but also sad. Yeah, that is a cool movie.
Yeah, that's good.
Paddington is number 9. Aww.
Paddington,
so sweet. Like marmalade. I added the like marmalade part.
Henry would be so upset if he was here.
Number 8 is the 100-Foot Journey. Set in a quaint French village where Helen Mirren plays the owner of an acclaimed restaurant for many years. Then an Indian family moves in and opens a restaurant 100 feet away. War erupts between the two establishments. It's delightful. See, that sounds like fun.
War erupts. It's delightful.
Number 7, The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies.
Nice.
This is the last part of an amazing work. I don't have the same level of love for the Hobbit series as I do for Lord of the Rings. Therefore, I do not watch him as much, but I do enjoy the characters and the story. I agree.
Yeah.
Aw, number 6, Veronica Mars. The movie is connected to a family memory. James introduced us to the series, and we started watching it together. We loved it, and we were so happy that he continued the story. Gosh, he's just... Number 5, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. This version of Spider-Man is my second favorite, and this is my second favorite of that version. It's fun, but it's also extremely sad. I know. Remember when Gwen Stacy dies? Every time I watch it, Laura like stares at me because tears roll down my eyes because she's heartless. Number 4, The Lego Movie. Well, duh. We still have the Lego room in our house, and our sons, daughters-in-laws, and grandchildren are huge Lego freaks. And on top of that, this movie is so much fun. Yeah, I know this is James' favorite movie from this year. And, you know, going to his house, his Lego room is a thing of legend, and it's always fun to go to.
But you can see in episode 4 of the Real Nerds Pod Show.
Oh, you can.
Okay.
Ghost Trappers.
Number three, Edge of Tomorrow. Love the sci-fi story, and of course, Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt are great together. I wonder if Ryan likes this one. No. I love it. Number two.
Nice John Lovitz delivery right there.
That was John Lovitz.
I love it.
It's Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Back in the spring, we started watching the Marvel movies in chronological order and just watched this a couple weeks ago. I enjoyed it more than I thought I remembered it being. It's a great film. And number one is Guardians of the Galaxy. The Guardians are up there in the top five of our favorites in the MCU. They are so much fun. I agree. Honorable mention, she also liked Interstellar and the Grand Budapest Hotel. She's looking forward to hearing... wait, let me read that. Like, I'm not reading it. But she's, you know, telling us. Looking forward to hearing your top 10 lists to see what we need to check out. Love and hugs to all. Carol.
Well, the priority is Tusk, and then...
Nope, Faithful Findings.
Faithful Findings. Oh, gosh. Faithful Findings, then Tusk, then what else? What's the third one? She needs three.
M.A. don't know.
I don't know either. 22 Jump Street. Well, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, she can watch 22 Jump Street. That's funny enough.
Oh, no, wait. Tusk... Faithful Findings, Foxcatcher. There you go.
Yeah, you want to be depressed.
And or horrified by a human walrus.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Real Nerds Podcast, Filmsplosion 2014 Redux. Next week, our film of the week is Red One, which stars The Rock and Captain America.
And J. Jonah Jameson. As Buff Santa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. J.K. Simmons is also in this one.
I mean, his Santa does things to me. I don't know.
So, yeah, stay tuned for that. You might see us at the movies. And until next time, bye.
Bye.
You waited all year, hear what the nerds have chosen. I'm telling you all, it's a Filmsplosion. Filmsplosion!
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.